Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Lyle Learner to Help You. The Lyle is sponsored by the Gordon Law School at Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Lyle is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Dr. Laura story when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What would you say if a plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who can't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Well, listen to James Nielsen. Now, Nielsen's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said, quote, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. It's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. A student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel, and a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax, unquote. Professor James Nielsen, Hastings Law School. Hey, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of the value of a woman. Remember that? We're talking about in Exodus 21:7 that we weren't talking about slavery. We're talking about bride price. And as an incident to that, I mentioned to you Proverbs chapter 31. I didn't read you the story there, but it's my contention that women are undervalued here in the United States. And I can't speak about the rest of the world, but here in the United States, women have been encouraged to compete with men. And so we see today women are driving truck. And women are driving Caterpillar tractors, and they're working as linemen, you know, out here on the right-of-ways, putting up electric power lines and telephone lines. And women want to compete with men. I guess it's because they say they want to make as much money as men. They're hitting the glass ceiling, and they're not giving their due in life. And 11% of the soldiers in the military are women. I mean, they're out on the front lines carrying guns and shooting and getting shot at, because they want to be equal with men. They want to compete with men. And I wanted to take today's program, I wanted to introduce you to this concept. I think women are being shortchanged. I think they're being underpaid, undervalued. And I thought I'd share with you a little corollary with what we were talking about with this bride price last time. Because women are very, very, very valuable. They're worth more than the average cow, horse, dog. Yeah, they're worth more than that. And that's why Jacob worked for 7 years for that one woman, Rachel. I mean, he could see that woman was worth a lot of money. Now, as I watch women in America today, I wouldn't pay $70,000 for the average woman out there on the street. If you said to me, look at this woman over here, she's an ex-soldier, and she served in Iraq, and she's got her honorable discharge from the service, I'm not sure that would make her worth $70,000 or $300,000. Now, remember last time I said, I've got a girl here, an 18-year-old girl. This girl is a virgin. Can you imagine what that girl would be worth as a virgin at age 23? I mean, girls over the age of 13 or 14, you know, that are still virgins aren't common. When they're 18 and they're still virgins, that's rare. Can you imagine what a treasure that girl would be at age 23 and still a virgin? And can you imagine if she was smarter, you know, 5 years from now than she is today? I mean, she's smart as a whip today at age 18. But I mean, you know, just give her five more years. Can you imagine what that girl might be worth? What kind of talent she might have? Now, let me share something with you. There's a woman by the name of Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis Schlafly. And back in the 70s, she was at the forefront of this anti-ERA amendment. She was opposed to equal rights for women. Did you know that? And there was a newspaper, a journalist, not a newspaper, a journalist of some kind. He was interviewing her on TV. And he asked her plainly, I was watching TV in my living room. I'm sitting there watching, you know, the 6 o'clock news. And this guy, he said to Phyllis Schlafly, he said, why are you opposed to the Equal Rights Amendment? Why are you opposed to the Equal Rights Amendment? He just flat ass went out and asked her. He said, hey, what's that all about? And she said, I'm opposed to it because I already have superior rights. And I don't want to trade my superior rights for mere equality. Now I'm a boy. See, I'm a man. I'm sitting here on the couch watching this woman on TV, and she said, I don't want to trade my superior rights for mere equality. And I was dumbfounded. I didn't know anything about the law then. I was a crummy businessman at that time. I could add and subtract, you know, just barely. And I could read a little bit. You know, I'd been to public school, but I wasn't too smart. And that explains that. You know, I've been to public school. It tells you why I wasn't too smart. So I didn't quite understand what this woman had in mind. But now that I've studied law, you know, for some 20 years now, or 23 years, I guess it is now. Hey, listen. I'm right there with her. I can grasp and understand. That woman is worth a lot of money. Now, that woman, you know, if she was up for marriage, Phyllis Schlafly, she's an old lady now. I mean, hell, she must be 70 years old. I think she's older than I am. But I'm just pointing out, but if that woman was up for marriage and I had a shot at her, you know, I mean, if I was going to marry that woman, I wouldn't blink at paying $100,000 in U.S. currency for that woman to marry her. Wouldn't blink. She's worth easy that much. Easy. So in trying to arrive at the value for a woman, you know, you got this one, maybe she's a young chick and she's got her discharged from the army and she's real macho, you know, she's been in the army and killed a bunch of Iraqis or something. I wouldn't think that she was worth very much. But that Schlafly woman, she's worth a lot. And I'm married to a woman that's worth a bunch. I'm married to one of those. And I wanted to tell you about the difference in the value of these women. Because in Proverbs chapter 31, God, you remember the guy I told you about last time, the guy that hung the moon in orbit around the earth, the guy that started the fire out there on the sun? Pretty smart guy. He described what he thought a good wife would be like. And in Proverbs chapter 31, he tells this story. And that's what I alluded to the last time, and I didn't have time to complete the thought. So I thought this time I'd just start off and tell you. In Proverbs chapter 31, in verse 10, here's God. He says, who can find a virtuous woman for her price is far above rubies? God, you can say that again. Who can find a woman who's a virgin today in America? Yeah, that's her price is above rubies. And rubies, boys and girls, are rarer than diamonds. They don't cost as much, but they're rarer. In verse 11, he says, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her so that he shall have no need of spoil. She shall do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hand she plants a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength. She strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her candle goes not out by night. She lays her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretches out her hand to the poor, and yea, she reaches forth her hand to the needy. She isn't afraid of the snow, for her household, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes fine linen and sells it, and she delivers girdles to the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looks well to the ways of her household and eats not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but you excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Eternal, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Now, that's a virtuous woman. That's a woman with wisdom, understanding. And that's why I opened by saying, you know, that woman, Phyllis Schlafly, is a woman of wisdom, a woman of understanding. Long before I developed any wisdom or understanding, I just sitting there on the couch like a dumb bull chewing his cud watching her. And she said, why would I want to give up superior rights for mere equality? That's a woman who understood her place. She understood her rights, her duties, her obligations, her value. And as a woman, she knew that they were superior to men. And it was designed that way in the Garden of Eden. You women are superior to men, intellectually. As a general rule, women are superior to men intellectually. And the only reason that women for thousands of years weren't educated and didn't have their place in the educational system or in society is because men repressed them. I mean, that's just the history of it. That's the way the game is played. So, you know, given their opportunity, just thinking about my own wife here, in the last, we've been married a little over 20 years, in the last 20 years or so, my wife works. And notice that this woman works. My wife has her own private property. And you notice this woman in Proverbs 31, she considers a field and goes out and buys it. She has money to go out and buy real estate, and she sells it. She sees that her products are good. She has hired help. Notice her maidens. She has women working for her. She has people working for her. My wife does the same thing. And that Phyllis Schlafly woman, she does the same thing. She runs some organization, nationwide organization, to this day. You can bet she gets up early in the morning and she directs operations. She has money. She's able. You know, I was thinking about women and money. You know, my wife is educated, well-educated. And she can read real good, and she counts real good. And I depend upon her, and I don't have to go around behind her and count for her or second guess her. Yeah, that's having a good wife. Now, there's a lot of women out there that can do that, and probably more would do it if they had the opportunity or if they had the knowledge, if they had the understanding from the Scripture as to what value a woman has. Women are exceedingly valuable. And because of their value, God places a high price on them, and that's why you have that bride price statute. Now, of course, a woman in different straits is going to sell for a different price. In Indonesia, in the village, you know, a woman sells for 7 cows. In this country, cows are worth about $3,000 if they're a top-line cow, 3,000 times 7, $21,000. I said Phyllis Schlafly is worth $100,000 at the drop of a hat. We'd open the bidding on her at $100,000, as old as she is. My wife is easy worth $15,000 in gold coin as a bride price because she makes $15,000 a year in gold coin. I mean, she creates that much wealth every year by herself. And I'm not talking about what we do together as a team in our marriage. I'm just saying that she gets up in the morning and she buys and sells and trades, and she makes $15,000 a year in gold coin. Now, how does a woman do that? And why can't other women do that? Is she unique? Is she the only woman in America? No, not at all. At my age, of course, I'm kind of an old man now, you know, but at my age, I probably could name 10 women today that make the equivalent of $15,000 a year in gold coin, or have the ability to, or have the wisdom and the understanding to accomplish that, assuming, of course, that they were aimed at making money. And, you know, there's other things in life that you might want to do beside make money. You might want to influence the political process, or you might want to start some institution or organization, or you might want to stop abortion, or, you know, there's other things, you know, that people want to do. But I thought I would share that with you because God places a high value on females. And I think females should be the first to recognize that they have a great value. Whores don't have any value. Girls that have lost their virginity at age 13, 15, or 17 don't have any value. And that's just where reality is at. Now, a virgin, a well-trained virgin, an intelligent one, you know, as I'm talking about marriage now, that's got some value. You're talking about bride price, you're talking about a woman's value. God has placed it and placed the duties and the obligations on females. And when you follow these laws, then you realize that value. Realize you collect that value. My daughter is going to collect that value, put that money in a safe place, and she's going to start off by buying, selling, and trading. I'm sure that this daughter will be as valuable, maybe more valuable than her mother. And as a cattleman, I take a look at a cow, and I see her production, her productivity, and I say, her daughter. I've got daughters that come out of these cows, and I say, this heifer is going to be as good as or better than her mother. She comes from good breeding. All right, just thought I'd share that with you. Now, listen, Christina goes on to ask this question. Remember our girl here, Christina Eckerson from college, the college girl from up in Vermont. She asks Dr. Laura question number 1, 2, 3, 4. Question number 4, which is this. Listen to this. She says, Christina goes on to ask this question. I know that I am allowed no contact with a woman while she is in her period of menstrual uncleanness, as revealed in Leviticus 15, verses 19 through 33. The problem is, how do I tell? I have tried asking, but most women take offense. Hey, Christina, that's really funny. That's pretty humorous. But it's pathetic. It's pathetic in a way because menstruation is a normal bodily process. You know, it's like sneezing or urination or going to the bathroom number 2. It's a normal bodily process designed by God. And he's a pretty smart guy. I mean, you know, he designed a woman's body for reproduction. The menstrual cycle is a part of that reproduction cycle, reproduction mechanism. I have never invented anything quite that good. And I'm not sure that I could. And as a matter of fact, I could tell you right now, it's beyond me. I couldn't make anything that'll reproduce itself like that woman's body. And I'm not sure that that menstruation cycle over there is a bad design mechanism either, ladies. I've had, my wife has said, oh, you just don't know the trials and the tribulations and the trauma of the menstrual cycle. And I'm sitting here saying, well, gosh, ladies, did God make a design error? Did he screw up again and it needs to be fixed? Do we need to do something? Do we need to go to medical science maybe to have medical science fix his design mistake here in women's bodies? And this young girl here, now she wants to make a joke out of this. She wants to make something kind of funny. You know, she's going around. Go just, you know, you picture this. You walk up to some woman and you say, have you got the rag on, lady? Yeah, I could see women getting pretty rude and uptight about that. But then, is that what God is instructing here in this statute? That's the crux of it. Is that something that comes from the Bible? Because this young woman, Christina Eckerson, is alluding to, well, that's what God has given us, and it's really stupid. Ladies, I don't think that women's bodies are stupid. I think it's well-designed, well-designed. So, Christina, let's take a closer look at this law, and let's see if we can clear up any confusion that you might have as a woman trying to obey God and keep his commandments, as I'm very sure that you're sincere and have an earnest desire to do, which is my humor. I mean, this girl's got her head so far up the wrong end of her anatomy over here, I don't think she'll ever see daylight. But here's the statute, kind of a long statute. And I guess we need some instruction, don't we? Women menstruate. And this fluid, like feces, is highly toxic. I mean, this is a toxic. I mean, it's like plutonium. I mean, this stuff is something that you don't want to handle in the everyday casual, you know, like squeezing orange juice. This isn't exactly that kind of fluid. Listen to this. It says, if a woman have an issue, and her issue in her flesh be blood, she shall be put apart 7 days, and whosoever toucheth her shall be unclean until the even. And everything that she lies upon in her separation shall be unclean, and everything also that she sits upon shall be unclean. And whosoever touches her bed shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. Whosoever touches anything that she sat upon shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And if it be on her bed, I'm going to underline that. Notice, and if it, the little word it, be on her bed. You know, that little word it is the subject matter of this entire statute. What is that it that's being spoken of here? Tuck it away in your heart. We'll come back to that. And if it, this mysterious it, be on her bed or on anything whereon she sitteth, when he toucheth it, he shall be unclean until the evening. Do you see that it? There it is again, it. And if any man lie with her at all, and her flowers be upon him, flowers, I'm going to underline flowers because that's that mysterious it stuff again, it, he shall be unclean 7 days. Oh my God, he's not unclean until the even, he's unclean for 7 days. And all the bed whereon he lies shall be unclean. And if a woman has an issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, excuse me, girls, does this mean that this is that extended period of time? That it ran over 5 days, 6 days, 8 days? Did you think God knew in advance that events like that might happen, that your period might be longer than 5 days? Yeah, it looks like in verse 25, he knew that was going to happen. All the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation, and she shall be unclean. Every bed whereon she lieth all the days of her issue shall be unto her as the bed of her separation, and whatsoever she sits on shall be unclean as the uncleanness of her separation, and whosoever touches those things shall be unclean, and shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the even. But if she be cleansed of her issue, then she shall number to herself 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. And on the eighth day she shall take unto her two turtles, or two young pigeons, that's turtle doves, and bring them unto the priest to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for her before the Eternal for the issue of her uncleanness. Thus shall you separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, that they die not in their uncleanness, when they defile my tabernacle that is among them. This is the law of him that has an issue, and of him whose seed goes forth from him and is defiled therewith, and of her that is sick of her flowers, and of him that hath an issue of the man, and of the woman, and of him that lieth with her that is unclean. Now, there's another little part to the story here that Christina didn't bring up, and that is male semen. So let's use the word semen, and then let's use the word menstrual blood. I'm going to write that down right there. Okay, now, this doesn't have anything to do with being rude and obnoxious and asking some woman whether or not she's in her cycle. This has to do with a health law. This has to do with contagious disease. That's what this is dealing with. This is pretty serious business. You know, we're talking about disease. We're talking about contagious disease here. Now, you people run around and you're just fearful and timid of disease, as is evidenced by the fact that you take your children in and have them vaccinated, and by age 5, your children have had 35 vaccinations because you're afraid of disease, contagious disease. I've never talked to anybody or heard anybody in conversation ever bring up Leviticus 15, verses 19 through 33, as something that we need to be concerned about because of disease. Now, people will talk about vaccinations, and your vaccination record, and the school nurse gets real excited about disease and vaccination and contagious diseases, and they think that you're really stupid if you don't have any shots. Now, I'm an old man. I don't have any shots, no vaccinations. My children don't have vaccinations, at least they didn't have when they lived with me. I avoided that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. But I taught my daughters about this law concerning the menstrual cycle, because as you can see here, whatever this it is, and this it is the blood, it is the fluid from the female body during the menstrual cycle over here that's contagious. It's got disease in it. It is like feces. It is something that you need to be careful with. Notice up here in the first verse it says, and she shall be put apart 7 days. I was talking to this guy one time, and his wife, they happened to be over here, and he built a little house. He had two or three daughters, and he built this little house aside from their main house. And whenever any of these females was having their period, they had to go live in this little house outside of their regular house. Based upon verse 19. There's nothing in there that says that you got to build a separate little house and divorce these women and treat them, you know, like they've got leprosy. Boys and girls, this menstrual cycle is a normal bodily process, just like going to the bathroom. But girls, when you go to the bathroom, don't you use toilet paper when you wipe? And aren't you careful about how you wash your hands in case you have an accident and the toilet paper breaks and you get that doo-doo on your fingers? I mean, you treat feces like it's dangerous stuff. And well, this menstrual blood is more dangerous than the feces. There's no corresponding statute in the scripture on feces. I mean, this is heavy-duty stuff. Now, notice that the it is the blood. It's not when you sit on the couch, because, you know, today in modern times, we have sanitary napkins, Christina, which contains this fluid, this it, you know, this flowers, this it stuff. It's not the fact that you sat on the couch and now we have to take the couch out and burn it. It's that if you get this blood on the couch, then you have, just like feces that you get on the couch, it's got to be carefully washed off and then bleached with Clorox or some other disinfectant, doesn't it? I mean, come on, kids, let's grow up and get to be real people and adults, and let's talk like adults, shall we? Because the creator of the universe, I mean, the guy, you know, that hung the moon out there and started the fire on the sun, he talks like an intelligent person. He's giving you a statute here, and he says, hey, listen, what we're dealing with here is health, Christina. This deals with health, not manners or being rude. Hang on, and we'll be back with the conclusion on this menstruation thing and health. As soon as I remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date at our website for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Dr. Laura story. A letter published by Christina Erickson some years back on the internet, with a pointed jab right at Dr. Laura Schlesinger, whom she's trying to ridicule and make fun of, and God in the Bible, who she's ridiculing and making fun of. And we're talking about the menstrual cycle. And remember her question, in case you forgot, Christina goes on to ask this question. I know that I'm allowed no contact with a woman while she is in her period of menstrual uncleanness, cited in Leviticus 15, verses 19 through 33. The problem is, how do I tell? I've tried asking, but most women take offense. Well, okay, it's pretty funny. And I read the statute. And Christina, there isn't anything in that statute that has anything to do with your question. Again, the answer to your question, Christina, is contained in the full text of the statute. The subject here is the menstrual cycle in verses 19, 25, and 33. Sexual relations during that period of the menstrual cycle, which is addressed in verses 24 and 32. Then the beginning, the ending, and the extended menstrual cycle, which comes in verse 25, 28, 29, and 24. This statute deals with disease prevention in verse 21, 21, 22, 23, 24, 26, and 27. There is nothing in this statute that would require you to go up to a total stranger and ask her if she has the rag on. This statute is aimed at the woman who is in her menstrual cycle and places the entire burden upon that woman to warn away or to protect the people around her who come into contact with her, such as her husband, her children, her friends, or visitors. It's like the quarantine statute that we read about in Deuteronomy 23, verses 10 and 11, and the mask that you wear over your mouth to prevent the spread of germs that might infect others that we read about in Leviticus 13, verses 45 and 46. And so there are 18 of these health laws. Let me just break in and make an observation here. And the one country in the world that practices the quarantine law, in spite of the United Nations and in spite of the American Medical Association and the Center for Disease Control and all of modern medicine, which is really just a lot of voodoo, but nevertheless, one country in the world practices the biblical quarantine law. Did you know that? One country. 200 countries in the world, one of them practices the biblical quarantine law that we read about in Deuteronomy 23, verses 10 and 11, and Leviticus 13, verses 45 and 46. You know what country that is? Cuba. You know what they're quarantining? AIDS. And you know what country has the lowest incidence or communication of AIDS from one person to another? It's Cuba. That's right. Now, you know, we Americans like to take credit for being, you know, medically competent, medical, you know, on the cutting edge of medical technology. Can you send me an email and tell me of one disease that we've cured through medical technology? Name one. Got a lot of treatments and no cures to anything. I can't think of any disease that's been cured. None. Zero. Zilch. Name one. Smallpox. Ah, oh, come on. I covered that for you the other day. Measles, mumps, rubella. Give me a break, would you? Go back and look at your books. Now look, there's certain laws that govern physical human anatomy. Now I've got an 18-year-old girl here. And every month she has her regular menstrual cycle, just the way it was designed. Her body has been designed by a master designer and creator. Well, it's either that or the miracle of random chance. The miracle of random chance. We here think that she was specially designed and created, and we follow this law. We do not have a special building out here that we excommunicate her to for this period of time. And she's a very bright young girl. She can wipe herself. Yeah, and she can take care of her own bodily processes, and she can keep clean, and she doesn't get that it stuff all over the couch or all over other things, and she doesn't contaminate the rest of us with that it stuff. Now, boys and girls, we all go to the bathroom, and you know that it stuff called feces, we're able to wipe ourselves. Well, you know, most of us. I'm not sure about everybody, but most of us. And we can keep that feces off of other people and off of other things and off of our hands, and we can wash our hands, and we can keep clean, and that's what the statute's all about. It isn't some law that's designed to be rude and obnoxious. The burden is placed upon a female to keep herself clean and to keep herself from contaminating other people. We do that with our feces and wiping our butts, don't we? And women just have one little extra burden. You got one more little bodily excretion there, girls, that you got to take care of without getting it all over the rest of us, okay? And you know, most women are able to do that. I'm not sure about Christina here, but most women. are able to do that. And the women in this household are fully capable. That's why we have such a high bride price. I mean, they're capable women. They take care of themselves and they keep themselves clean. So this statute is nothing, or there's nothing in the statute that would require you to go up to some total stranger. The statute is aimed at women, and it's up to that woman to keep herself clean and to protect the rest of us. The menstrual discharge, like feces, is the vehicle for germs and disease. This law is aimed at the person who is a potential carrier or vehicle to spread germs and contagious disease. It puts the responsibility upon that person to keep clean. Do not spread germs. Protect the people that you come in contact with. Please note that this germ theory quarantine mask over your mouth story comes from the Bible and menstrual hygiene, and it was given 3,000 years ago before anybody ever saw a microscope or a germ or a virus. Isn't that just special? Now, why would we have health and hygiene laws unless we knew something about germs, viruses, and disease? Now, this was done 3,000 years ago before microscopes and Louis Pasteur. Think of that. Now, that tells us that this God, whoever wrote this book, this Bible, knew something about disease, disease pathogens, germs, mold, spores, viruses, quarantine, and a mask over your mouth to keep from spreading them. And he extended it right here. And he said, now listen, boys and girls, especially you girls, if this it stuff gets on anything over here, it becomes contaminated and unclean until the even means you got to clean it up. That's what that means. That's what that's aimed at. Now, when I was a boy, we learned about elementary hygiene, like wipe your behind and wash your hands before we entered the first grade. Evidently, in our modern, enlightened, educated society, you, Christina, and your college classmates have not been instructed in elementary hygiene 101. So I commend you for your keen interest in this important area of life, and I want to encourage you to read your Bible more and to learn those important life skills that are so neglected by our institutions of higher learning today. So please, Christina, wash your hands after you go big, and dispose of your sanitary napkins properly, and don't go around asking strangers if they're wearing the rag. It's very, very rude. All right, now there's my comment on an important law. You know, not the single most important law of the Bible. You know, certainly doesn't rank with murder, you know, or adultery or Sabbath breaking, which are capital felonies. But it does have to do with health and hygiene and just cleanliness and good order. And it makes a lot of sense. And it was given to us by God, who isn't near as dumb or near as ignorant. You know, I like to think about these scientists today. You know, these doctors, you know. Judy Gerberding. You ever heard that name? Judy Gerberding. She's the spokesman for the Center for Disease Control down in Atlanta, Georgia. And she's on the news hour every once in a while. And whenever they're having something like the bird flu, you know, they'll go to the CDC and Judy, Gerberding will come on and she'll answer the questions, you know, for the President of the United States and the United States of America. She represents the CDC and all of its vaunted medical knowledge and expertise. Boys and girls, 200 years ago, these fools didn't even know what the hell a germ was. 3,000 years ago, the writer of the Bible not only described it and explained it, told you how to avoid it. And so now at the Center for Disease Control, to fix God's cleanliness standards, they give us vaccines. And they say, you can be as dirty as you want. Just make sure you get the right snake venom or monkey pus to protect you from the disease. Huh. Okay, boys and girls, if you want to trade good health for autism or sudden infant death syndrome, go vaccinate your kid. Meanwhile, back on the farm, the Bible tells you, you know, if you'd wake up and clean up your act, clean, keep clean, you could avoid more disease with Lysol than you can with vaccine. Now let's come to the crux of our email, which says, why can't I own Canadians? And Christina asks, in Leviticus 25, verse 44, it states that I may indeed possess slaves, both male and female, provided they're purchased from neighboring nations. Now a friend of mine claims that this applies to Mexicans, but not Canadians. Can you clarify? Why can't I own a Canadian? Well, notice that question, the way it's worded and the way it's framed, is poked at slavery. And notice how it identifies the Bible in Leviticus 25:44 states that I indeed can own slaves, both male and female. It's kind of aimed here at slavery and the slave issue and the race issue here in the United States. And that God is pro-slavery, and we, the enlightened inhabitants of the 20th century, have wisely enacted the 13th Amendment, and we have banned slavery in America. And therefore, we are more advanced than God. And we're wiser and smarter than God, and we cleaned up and fixed God's mistake. Isn't that just special? And this girl, you know, she's been to college. And she picked up on that. And when she was in college, she has been indoctrinated over the slavery issue, as have all the people of America. And we've been brainwashed into believing that slavery is bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. I want to tell you, boys and girls, that's a damn lie. Slavery is not evil. Slavery is not wicked. Slavery was created by God Almighty himself as a social status. Now, just because we don't know how to use slavery, and we have abused slavery, and we have been punished for the abuse of our slavery, doesn't mean that slavery is bad or that God needs to be corrected. You know, the same guy that invented women's bodies and gave them the menstrual cycle, the same guy that hung the moon out there in orbit around the earth, the same guy that started the fire out there on the sun, also invented slavery. Did you know that? He also invented a couple of other social statuses, you know, like bond servitude, bond servants, and slaves. And he gave us some laws that govern those. And this one statute taken out of context, as this girl is wont to do, but then that's not anything unusual because preachers do the same thing. Preachers and lawyers and politicians always lift one statement out of context. And then they zero in on that one statement. And then they deceive you, mislead you, and lie to you as a result of it. So I came back and I said, well, indeed, I can clarify that. The problem here is your friend. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Remember the friend here that said you could own a Mexican, but you can't own a Canadian? And that's why this girl, Christina, is confused, because she listens to her friends and her preacher instead of reading the scripture. And then watch out for your college professors too, Christina, because the college professors and the preachers ridicule and they make fun of the Bible. And also, I'm not so sure that they know what they're talking about either. Now, friends and college professors do more to confuse than they do to clarify the issue. So let's look at Leviticus 25:44 again. This one scripture cited by itself is only part of the statute. It's only part of the story. So let's cite the whole statute. Let's just be real wild here. And let's read the whole story. And let's see if we can understand how we're to use the statute. It comes from Leviticus 25, starting in verse 39. So in Leviticus 25, verse 39, and if a brother that dwells by you be waxen poor and be sold unto you, you shall not compel him to serve as a bondservant, but as a hired servant and as a sojourner, he shall be with you, and he shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. Christina didn't mention anything about the year of Jubilee. She didn't mention anything about some guy being waxed poor and being sold because of his poverty. She didn't mention that, now did she? She just said, gee, I'd like to own a Canadian. And then shall he depart from you, both he and his children with him, and shall return unto his own family, and unto the possession of his fathers shall he return. For they are my servants, which I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as bondmen. You shall not rule over him with rigor, but you shall fear God. Both your bondsmen and your bondmaids, which you shall have, shall be of the heathen that are round about you. And of them shall you buy bondsmen and bondsmaids. And moreover, of the children of the strangers that do sojourn among you, of them shall you buy, and of their families that are with you, which they begat in your land, and they shall be your possession. And you shall take them as an inheritance for your children after you, to inherit them for a possession, and they shall be your bondmen forever. As I said before, I don't know how long forever is, but I do know that it isn't up yet. And I do know that the Emancipation Proclamation was enacted in 1863. And I do know that the Emancipation Proclamation enacted in 1863 was enacted before forever was terminated. So if you want to know which law takes precedence, it's this one here in the Scripture. Now, whether you want to practice this law of the Scripture or not, that's a choice for you to make. And whether you want to obey God and keep His commandments, that's a choice for you to make. Now, we Americans have said, in effect, God, we will not practice your bondservant statutes. We're not going to practice your Jubilee statute. We're not going to practice land Sabbaths. We're not going to practice Hebrew bondservant statutes. We're going to practice the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment. Well, okay. Hey, kids, don't let me get in the way now of your happiness and success. But you need to understand that all law has a penalty. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And when you break the law, you're going to suffer a penalty. So God comes along here and he says, now I'm going to explain to you how to use bondservants and indentured bond servitude, slavery, man-stealing, and I'm going to explain that to you. So let's see if there's a little bit more to the story. Verse 47, he says, if a sojourner or a stranger wax rich by thee, and your brother that dwells by him waxes poor and sells himself unto the stranger or the sojourner, or if the stock of the stranger's family, after that he is sold, he may be redeemed again. One of his brethren may redeem him.
Either his uncle or his uncle's son may redeem him, or any that is nigh of kin unto him of his family may redeem him, or if he is able, he may redeem himself. And he shall reckon with him that bought him from the year that he was sold to him unto the year of Jubilee, and the price of his sale shall be according unto the number of the years, according to the time of a hired servant shall it be with him. Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, we have bond servants, slaves, Hebrew servants, and now we have hired servants. Christina didn't mention any of those, did she? And he shall reckon with him. Reckon? With him that was bought him, or that bought him from the year that he was sold to him unto the year of Jubilee. Jubilee year? Hey, this thing is getting curiouser and curiouser, isn't it? Jubilees? What's that all about? And if there be yet many years behind, according unto him them, he shall give him the price of his redemption out of the money that he was bought for. And if there remain but few years until the year of Jubilee, then he shall count with him, and according unto his year shall he give him again the price of his redemption. And as a yearly hired servant shall be with him, and the other shall not rule with rigor over him in your sight. And if he be not redeemed in those years, then he shall go out in the year of Jubilee, both he and his children with him. For unto me the children of Israel are servants. They are my servants, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt, and I am the Eternal your God. Now, I want you to notice here that God says that the Israelites are his servants. Now, the people of America, who are primarily Israelites, have said in effect, no, we're not your servants, and we will not serve you. Now, that's our choice. That's the choice we made, and we made it in 1863 with the Emancipation Proclamation and followed it up with the 13th Amendment. We will not serve you. We will make our own laws. We'll make our own statutes, and we'll make our own judgments. Now, next time, we'll take a look at the answer to this question of bond servitude. And instead of looking just at slavery, we'll look at hired servants, bond servants, Hebrew servants, man-stealing, and slavery in the context of the Bible. A wild new concept. A wild new concept. Hey, I'm out of time again. We've got to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by pre-arrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. If you'd like more information, remember our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we've got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.